This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Asheville is known by many names, including Ash Vegas and Beer City. And now some may be calling it by its new identity, the Climate City. NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information is headquartered in Asheville. The center provides public access to the nation's climate and historical weather data and information. NOAA says it's one of the most significant archives on the planet. Well, this week, Asheville was host to the first ever ClimateCon. The conference brought together startups and corporations interested in creating products that help people deal with the effects of climate change. Helen Chickering is a reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. She reported on the conference and joins us now from BPR. Hello, Helen.
Good afternoon, Frank.
Good to have you. Josh Dorfman is also with us. Josh Dorfman is the head of the Venture Asheville. It's an entrepreneurship initiative, the Economic Development Coalition for Asheville-Buncombe County and the Asheville Chamber of Commerce. Also the incoming CEO of the Collider, which hosted ClimateCon. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Frank. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Helen, tell us about this conference. What went on?
Well, this was a business conference, Frank. There were close to 150 people there, climate entrepreneurs, climate scientists, corporations, nonprofit, academia. And really, it felt like an effort to focus, put the spotlight on Asheville as a climate business hub, not just a climate destination, because we get lots of, or a conference destination, we get lots of conferences here, and not just a climate-friendly city. There was also a student summit, so the first 2 days, totally business, and then there was a student summit, more than 130 students from local colleges and high schools. So really an effort to shine the spotlight on Asheville as a climate business hub, just like Research Triangle kind of has that technology business. They want, organizers want people to think of Asheville as Climate City as it connects to business.
Yeah, and that connection, I think, as you pointed out just now, Helen, does make it unique. You talked to a number of people at the conference, including Drew Jones from Climate Interactive in Asheville. And here's what he had to say about kind of what made this conference unique in his mind.
Yeah, for a long time, the main users of these data have been activists like me. People were saying, oh my God, climate change is here. What are we going to do? This is a totally different situation. This is about the day-to-day runnings of our farms, of where we site our power plants, of how we think about where we build cities, how we get cities ready for the summer, which is hotter, where we plant our gardens, which seeds to use, the very practical decisions we make every day, not fueling activism. It's about just driving our lives now.
So that was Drew Jones from the Climate Interactive in Asheville, and we're talking about Asheville as a climate city now with Helen Chickering of Blue Ridge Public Radio and Josh Dorfman, the incoming CEO of the Collider in Asheville. Josh, tell us what he's talking about. I mean, we're talking about examples now of businesses using climate data and coming to Asheville. Connect the dots for me.
Sure. So since we have a huge presence here from NOAA and the National Center for Environmental Information, as you mentioned, with all of this climate data here, we also have this incredible intellectual capital with all of the climate scientists here. So we have probably the largest group of climate scientists anywhere in the world. And so the concept is, if you have the brains and you have the data and you know that the world needs to adapt to a changing climate, can you help businesses, individuals, governments start to become more predictive in understanding what's going to happen to them or to the places they live? So for example, we have a company here called Health eWeather, and they're working on a product called the Daily Breath, which is for people who have asthma. They're developing a personalized asthma warning system using climate data, historical data, and other data that the medical professional community would use today to say, okay, on any given day, you could say to, maybe Alexa, what's my daily breath? And what's my warning? And they'd say, okay, Josh, it's high today. It's about a 5. So be careful when you go outside. So you take an extra inhaler, you go outside, let's say you have a flare-up. You open your app, you find the daily breath, you tag on your app, say, okay, I had a flare-up. And then in the background, that app geotags your location, starts grabbing all sorts of data to say, okay, what's the weather? What's the dew temperature? What's the barometric pressure? Other data we might not even ever correlate or think about in terms of asthma. And then that app gets smarter for that individual about what's happening to them personally in a changing climate so they can be more proactive in terms of taking care of themselves with asthma. And you can imagine for a mom who's sending a kid off to school in a changing climate to have more comfort and confidence that child is properly prepared, That's the kind of solution we're talking about.
So what's the role here for the National Centers for Environmental Information, which is in Asheville, but what's their role and how are they connected to all this?
Well, let's say that entrepreneur, in this case, Eric Kloss, who's developing this particular tool, he comes down to Asheville from Washington, D.C., and he says, I have this idea. How can you help me? And so we say, well, we have the tools on the business side to help mentor you, to help incubate this idea. But what you're also really going to need is access to climate scientists and those who can say, okay, if you want to build that kind of tool, here's the specific database you might use, or here's how we might build an algorithm on top of that climate database. They might say you need surface temperature as something that's going to be important, but there's six databases. Which one do you use? So Eric came down. He partnered with a company here called Case Consultants, who did a great job of helping him, and he spoke to scientists over at the National Center for Environmental Information. And that partnership, that collaboration, is vital to making sure that these products as they come to market are scientifically credible, and that collaboration as well also greatly accelerates the speed that we can bring these vital solutions to market as the climate's changing.
And that was on the minds of the conference attendees. Drew Jones, again, of Climate Interactive, here he is talking about that very issue.
In a lot of ways, what we're witnessing here is like 1849 Gold Rush, California. Like we just discovered, oh my God, we found gold. And the gold is Asheville's supply of climate data. And we're hearing the scientists who created the data tell us, did you know you could have these temperature numbers, this barometer readings, this long-term history and future, and all sorts of information that people can create businesses to provide to the world so that we're ready to deal with climate change.
That's Drew Jones from Climate Interactive in Asheville. I'm talking with Helen Chickering from Blue Ridge Public Radio and Josh Dorfman from The Collider. Well, Helen, it's interesting to me because all of this information is online. It's accessible from anywhere in the world. And it seems to me that to some extent the conversations with the scientists who generate these databases is somehow accessible. What is it about? I mean, what were you hearing from the attendees about the place, about a place called Asheville, which is a spot on a map?
Well, what I think makes it unique is we've got NOAA, we've got all this information, but if you've ever been to the website, you need a special kind of brain. I will say I don't have it to really decipher, as Josh mentioned, to know what you're looking for. And what the Collider has done, and the Collider is a nonprofit sort of like a work co-op business think tank where you've got scientists, entrepreneurs, people with business minds all coming together to brainstorm climate solutions or solutions to climate-related problems and hopefully spin out a new biz. But what you need is you need a translator, and you need somebody who can say, all right, if this is your goal, here are the tools that you'll need to do that. And that is what I think Asheville has. We have the information, but we also are churning out through UNC Asheville and other groups a tremendous number of data translators who know how to take that information and help a business person turn it into a product, like Josh just mentioned. And that is where the business end of this comes in. And the conference this week brought in big corporations and people from all over to look at that and say, wow, this is why we need to come here rather than just do something online or do a phone call, that there really is a reason to come to Asheville.
You know, Josh, this points to an interesting question and a paradox in some ways, because climate change, human-made climate change is with us. And there's not even a place to bury your head in the sand anymore because it's covered with the ocean. But beyond that, it's sort of what to do about it, and then there are sustainable energy solutions in the mix. But the questions, I guess, that you're tackling are, okay, but it's here. And since we're not going to turn it around overnight, what do we do in cities like Miami that are flooded to the max pretty much every day and where the pump business is a big one? So what are some of the other businesses that would be attracted to Asheville because of this and some of the other business ideas that we're talking about when adaptation is the first step in this crisis?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a great question because we're asking it too. This is such a new landscape, and from a business point of view, the opportunity is vast because we know climate impacts all of humanity. In the case of Miami, we have another company here called Fernleaf Interactive that has developed a tool which takes a look at coastline cities where the sea level is rising and or there's just lots of flooding. You mentioned Miami. And can say to the leaders of the city, okay, look, we can help you model what's going to happen as the water rises, as your city floods, where that water is going to flow. But there's another variable here. You're going to keep building. You're going to keep changing the built environment of your city. And so if someone comes in to wants to pull a permit to put a building in the ground, we can build a tool that can help you very quickly understand, well, what does that mean if that building goes up? Where will the water flow? And that becomes vital if there's, let's say, another severe storm or hurricane and there are evacuation routes. Well, of course, you want to make sure those evacuation routes are not underwater. But that all goes to the plan that a city is required to do to be responsible for its citizenry. And so we have really leading edge companies that are building tools to help, in this case, cities and all the citizens living there to be able to adapt and hopefully thrive as they, as we progress into the future.
This might be a difficult question to answer, too, but it does raise the question of moral hazard, whether or not if we make it easier to accommodate and enable the climate change, that we won't truly address it. I mean, I suppose you don't want anybody to be flooded. In the short run, you have to do something. But it does seem to be something of a paradox here, Josh.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, and certainly the point of view that we take today is we say, well, let's just take a look at the reality of where populations are vulnerable. Right? I mean, of course, I think what you're saying, Frank, is absolutely right. And some of those market signals need to be sent to people, too, from insurance companies. Is insurance going to go up if you're living in vulnerable areas? But that we don't know. But what we do know, where there are vulnerable populations or there are vulnerable supply chains or agriculture is at risk, we need to develop tools today because the climate is already changing and we can't wait. And so you're absolutely right. But to delay in the face of saying, well, suffer the consequences and then you'll see why it's time to adapt. Right. We take a more proactive approach.
And it wasn't only for adaptation. There were activists present at the conference as well. Melissa Malkin is one.
So I'm here to meet people who are starting to develop tools that we might be able to use. And I'll also be on a panel talking about opportunities for investment in, say, solar plus storage for rural co-ops. So I'm looking for what are the opportunities to not just advance the business side, but to advance the business side in a way that creates an equitable benefit and brings along everybody.
All right, so that's Melissa Malkin Weber from the Self-Help Credit Union Venture Fund, and we're talking about Asheville as a climate city now with Helen Chickering from Blue Ridge Public Radio and Josh Dorfman from the Collider. Helen, you've covered a lot of conferences. I mean, was there anything fundamentally different about this in your mind?
You know what I think was really different was, and I came from the Research Triangle area, covered a lot of conferences where there was research being presented, and then from research there's a recommendation or maybe a new treatment for something. But this was brainstorming in a way, and really most of the conferences that focused on climate were all about how can we recycle more, how can we be greener, or how can we reduce our carbon impact. And that was there, and that was a big part, and there was a lot of discussion about that. But this was also embracing the reality of a changing climate, what that means for business, and perhaps there is a business idea that spins out of that. And that, to me, was really interesting. There was a lot of reality-based discussions, as we just heard, everything from insurance to funding to product development based on, rising sea levels and increasing temperatures.
You know, it's interesting, too, Josh. We've talked to our military reporter a couple of times on this show about the fact that the military takes climate change very seriously. They've got all kinds of planning that they're in the midst of. What is it going to mean for changing theaters of war? What kinds of conflicts can we expect as resources grow scarce? And all these plans are in the book, which is to say the military is taking climate change very seriously. And it sounds to me like the business world, is again, whatever your politics, they have to understand that climate change is a real thing, and they're taking it very, very seriously.
Yeah, I would say that the business community is increasingly recognizing that there, because the challenge is so big and because it will impact corporations, it will impact governments, will in fact impact individuals, and it already is, right? We're already being impacted by climate change, that if we can develop tools that become ways for businesses to be more cost effective and continue to prosper as the climate changes, for governments to do a better job of planning and adapting and taking care of their citizens. You know, that's an opportunity to build some really profitable businesses that are also doing great good in the world. And so, you know, you can see with just how the business community at large is changing today across the landscape of the United States and globally, where business leaders are recognizing that the profit motive is no longer just enough, that businesses also have to do good in the world. This aligns with that. And of course, climate change, many would say, is the biggest challenge confronting humanity. And so you get a lot of visionary, really innovative people now starting to line up to say, what role can we play? What can we build? And how can we really get after this to meet the challenge ahead of us?
So how far away do you think you are from creating a reputation among business people for Asheville as the climate city? Is it here? Is it far away?
Well, I would say there is, to an extent, there's a certain reality to it today. I mean, it's not just the collider. There's an ethos in our city that extends, of course, from things that are really obvious and a little bit stereotypical about Asheville. I mean, about organic food and buying local. But GE Aviation is here in a big way, building parts that are going into their LEAP jet engines, which are the most fuel efficient in the world. We have other companies like that put a stake in the ground and put factories here in advanced manufacturing that are also aligned with helping the world adapt to a changing climate. So we can lay a stake to it, I would say, today. But it's more than that. It's really our aspiration. And we believe that we can be a beacon, that we can scale solutions from Asheville because of the assets that are here and the culture that supports those assets to really be a significant player in as we continue to move forward and recognize that this is a local challenge. It's a regional challenge, but it's truly a global challenge.
Josh Dorfman is the head of Venture Asheville. That's an initiative of the Economic Development Coalition for Asheville-Buncombe County and the Asheville Chamber of Commerce, also the incoming CEO for The Collider. Helen Chickering is a reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and I want to thank both of you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Frank. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Frank.
You can find out more about ClimateCon at our website, stateofthings.org. A program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.